All right, you guys, I am very excited about today's call because it covers one of my favorite topics. And yes, pretty much everything is my favorite topic except compliance and investments because they're not on the agenda, as you've no doubt noticed. Our goals this quarter are to do two things, three things that Adam and Tiffany have done incredibly well in their firm. So it just shows you it's not about where you start, it's about where you go. Getting clear on your client base, right? Clarifying the ideal client base, right sizing it, and right not compounding any more of the problems. Two, clarifying and defining that value, right? Starting with model meetings and surges, ultimately service models, special services, and then ultimately, which you'll hear more about today, the grand dame of CX, right? Like the whole enchilada. And then building a hyper efficient delivery system. And by hyper efficient, I don't mean skinny, cheap, and bad. I mean like hyper excellent. You invest time where it's impactful and needed, and you don't invest time where it's not, right? It's the factory work versus that focus work, or what I'll call that flow work, where you're right, Mark, you're just adding value to clients. Like, what if you just showed up and you did a little bit of business stuff and you added value to clients? Or if your value is the marketing, right? Like Adam, like you just get to do that all day, build the business. So it's really about how we set the income engine up this quarter. Front stage, how do we communicate the value? Backstage, how do we curate a delivery system that lets us deliver value, whether I happen to be there or not? For those of you that are the only advisor, which is many of you, means the office can run, the advice piece does need you, but the rest of it, that can still give you an incredible income and lifestyle. So this month, I want to take it a slightly different turn, because we want to paint the big picture of the client experience. So model meetings, surges, the service model, the specialized, right, automated systematized services are right, just going deeper. But that's one of the lanes within client experience. And client experience is the sum of everything, every touch point, thought, feeling. I know I love Mark and I love graphics, right? Every thought, feeling, experience that someone has across your entire life cycle, from the second that they hear about you until you let them go or they die or dump you. Like that's everything. Every email that you get from us, you ignore it, you look at it and you go, ooh, that was helpful. Or you're like there's a feeling with everything, right? And that overall feeling we like to call a brand. A brand is a promise that you make to the marketplace tangibly, right? Personal wealth operating system, a remarkable retirement for Tiffany's companies, right? But the journey is, does the feeling align with the brand? Do I feel like this is remarkable and I have everything I need? If the brand is lower price point, that's okay. You can still have an incredible, impactful experience at that price point, particularly with technology. That's what's so exciting about the client experience, is the things that used to have to do a lot of work to get to, you don't have to anymore. So the customer journey is everything from awareness to repurchasing, which they do every year or every quarter when your fees come in. And then the customer experience, like the service model, is a lane in that journey, which includes your advice, your support, how great, what they think and feel, the quality of the experience, how confident you are, how good you are at helping, their overall satisfaction, the kind of service they get. And so when we think about CX, like Tiff and I talk about, like it's like Charlie Brown's mom again. Like, what does that actually mean? And so that's what this conversation is really about. So we took the time to say, what is CX? And it really is that overall perception of those touch points, right? There's seven of them, eight of them. And then we broke down, here are the six things that you need to do, which I'm going to turn it over to Tiffany here. And she's basically going to walk you through their journey. It did not all happen in 30 or 90 days. This happened over the course of years, not 10, but like a couple, 2 to 3. So we talk about that 3-year runway. Mark, anywhere you're going to like crush it, think 2 to 3 years. I'm going to nail the heck out of the service model. This place is going to run itself and we're going to deliver massive value. 2 to 3 years to really nail that. Growth engine, right? Really get it going. Getting that team model. It's going to take, but you're laying the tracks, you're honing, and then you're refining, right? So we're going to really have Tiffany talk about how did they get to the point where they had to know their customers and start right sizing and engage with them and figure out how are they going to do it. And then it turns out it's not just stuff that happens in your head. You have to have these other people help you. We like to call those teams. Then you got to get the team on board. And what if everybody's not on board? And you got the right performers. And then how do you know you're doing a good job? You got to, like we've talked about, how do you measure performance? How do you know you're doing the right things? So you got to pay attention to your clients and feedback and the space and figure out, do I, you know, is what I'm doing good? Do I need to innovate? And then you ultimately need to align your culture. Tiffany will share a story about how it used to be like things would go wrong and then everyone would bring them the problems. And now the team comes to them and goes, we're ready to grow more. What can we do? And if I had told Tiffany that would be her life in three, you know, 3 years ago, hallelujah. So I want to really turn it over to Tiffany at this point. I'll leave this up for just a moment and then I'll take it down and really just open up a conversation about your customer journey. Have you thought about it? And I don't want you to take this conversation and think I have to go build 90 things. So remember, Limitless is laying foundational learning. That's what these in-between calls are for, so that you understand where the service model. When you build that model meeting, I don't just want agenda points. I want thoughts, feelings like, hey, what do I want to cover in the meeting? And when I talk about the changes in the tax law, how do I want them to feel? Well, I want them to feel like I got my stuff covered, right? So here's the way that I'm going to accomplish that, right? It's like a 10-second thought process, but it's really impactful. So with that, Tiff, I know some of you who are alumni are very familiar with Tiffany. Just by way of quick introduction, Tiffany is the Chief Growth Officer in two firms, Destiny Capital and Entrepreneur Aligned. Notice they're both distinct niches, which she'll tell you a little bit about. And Tiffany was actually a private client, a firm that she worked with, I think probably 6 or 7, I guess it's been 6 or 7 years, retained us. Ultimately joined the lifestyle program as part of their carry-on work. Tiffany, ultimately, growth is messy, sometimes grew out of that firm because it wasn't aligned with her vision of growth, lifestyle, and freedom, and income. And then ultimately joined Jared, where she is now. And right, they've gone through a process of taking that firm over from his dad and inheriting all of the legacy. I'll let her tell you the story. And then really re-engineering that firm, which is what you're doing. She just did it on a larger scale over the course of, I guess it's been 3 or 4 years now. So with that, I'll turn it over to you, Tiff. And really, we've got the next hour to just talk through where you are with client experience, your journey, which is going to touch on people and platform and marketing. So you guys, with that, I'm going to turn it over to Tiffany and just encourage you to open up your mics and answer questions, or you can drop them in the chat. And I, as I see him, I can pop him off to Tiffany for you. Tiffany, welcome.
That's great. Thank you. Hi, everybody. That was really nice. And that's the background. I've been sitting in the Chief Growth Officer seat since 2018 for the firm. And we went through, we're a second generation firm. So we had, we were previously what we would consider a lifestyle firm. Everything was in support of the founder so that he could serve the clients. But there really wasn't process or career pathing or those types of things. Honestly, even our clients, we were a generalist, right? Like if you had money and there was heart-to-heart conversations and you valued advice, we were probably going to work with you. When I came in, we part of the legacy and part of the desire for Jared and me as partners was like, we want to scale. The goal is that we are growing and serving more families, and we're creating an environment where really talented advisors could thrive. And we wanted to do it differently.
Can I just, as we go through, I'm just going to kind of interject here and there because I want you to pull some, I want to make sure you pull up really important things. First off, what did you hear Tiffany say there? Mark, can you unmute your mic?
It stood out really, really strongly. There was the add value and refine what they're doing. And actually not just deal with heartbeats, but to deal with real people in bringing value to them.
Yep. And so Mark's absolutely right, right? It's that culture they wanted to bring to the firm, the operational shift, because the heart was there, right? And I know that this is true for some of you. This is just the self-check. Some of you are in firms where this is true and you're trying to figure out how to change it, which is the entire firm was built around the founder walking in and going, what do I feel like today? That doesn't mean they didn't have some structure, like here's how, right? But it's sort of like in general, there was like pit stops here and there, like in the video games where you could pick up loot, but no organized way to say, here's how we're getting from one side of the field to the other. And we talk about this a lot in the value quarter, because for most of us, at least in the beginning, and we can get stuck here, is the value is the self. It's that Steph is here and Steph's got talent and Steph cares. But if you've talked to Natalie or Liz or Adam or Tiffany, what you'll find is they're also equally brilliant and capable and inspired to share, and they've got different perspectives, and you'll get something awesome irrespective of who you talk to. Right? Because that's the goal, is just to surround yourself with people that you know will deliver value, and then to build a system so that you know that value will be delivered whether you're there or not, right? Or if you're off on your 30-day summer holiday or whatever it is. So for Tiff and Jared, they had to realign every aspect of the firm, like peeling it off of the founder, mindset, methods, team. And that's the big shift that you're all going through, even if you're still the founder that's staying.
Yeah. Samantha, I love that. That's our internal mission, is create an environment where talented people can thrive. And it really has helped us make decisions as a company regarding our team and the ways that we're approaching workflows and just everything that we're doing. It's so clear to be like, does it help them thrive or does it not? And so that's been great. So I come in and Jared brought me in to grow the firm. And I was like, okay, here we go. Like, I love business development. We're going to get into marketing. Let's get the team. Like, I'm interviewing all the advisors. Who are you passionate about serving? What are your favorite clients? Tell me about that. And I start taking note and I'm like, great, we're going to build you over here a mastermind, and we're going to do webinars for women dealing with the loss of a spouse over here. And we had several advisors that were under it. And I'm like, we're going to like live in our passion and grow. And we started to get a tad bit of momentum, and like we started breaking internally. Like, we just didn't have processes to successfully onboard. We didn't have like metrics on who we're onboarding. So we were accepting, you know, $1,500 fees. And I mean, we operate as a team. We have centralized investments. We have centralized client accounts and operations. And then we have the advisors, and we have a 2-advisor team where it's a lead and a pair of clients. Like, we are not profitable at $1,500. So we were like, put that to a halt, because growth can magnify where you're going to break. And if we wanted to scale the way that we wanted to scale, we needed to create the operational leverage in order to do so. And so I, as excited as I was about growth, came to Jared, and we had a big conversation about why we need to evaluate our firm from who is our ideal client and where do we have boundaries there. So quick thing is, like, before even looking at our client base, I was like, how do we stop the bleeding from bringing in more non-profitable clients, right? So let's look at that. Let's look at our client base. How do we have them segmented? Why do we value certain clients in one versus another? Let's get really clear on our tiers of clients, both from a revenue perspective, as well as we're defining what I would call our high value client. Who's engaged, who's not engaged. So we did that process. And then it was like, what technology is supporting us, from project management to, you know, advisor platforms to planning platforms, you name it. And then how much building from scratch are we doing? So is this advisor building something, and then this advisor has the same problem and they're building it too, because there isn't information sharing? And so that all existed. So we had to start prioritizing, what are our rocks and how do we hit that over time? And so Stephanie has a great spreadsheet. I don't know if you guys have used it, where like you can input like everything that you need to see from a client basis and get like, where are your revenues? Where are we profitable? What's the profit margin that we want as a firm and as owners for distribution? What's the cost of our operations? What's the price per, you know, what's the cost per employee and cost per advisor, so that we just start collecting the data so that the data can give us feedback. The nice thing is data is not judgmental. Like, we're judgmental. So we got to be really kind to ourselves when we first see it, because there were a lot of families that we were serving and we were really not profitable in serving them. And that's hard as a firm, because as a business owner, if we're looking to create an environment where talented people can thrive and they want to build their careers, like, we can't be running on high numbers that aren't profitable. So that's where we started. We started to, okay, who are we going to serve? What's our client service model? We backed into that number. We were like, okay, we hit all the things we want to hit at a minimum of $7,500 per client household. Great. Who falls underneath that? Who falls above that? And then what are our tiers beyond that? Like, where do complexities meet client service model consistently, right? So if they're above a fee revenue of $20,000 a year, we consider that a high value client for us. And so that's going to be our platinum. The gold is somewhere between that 15 to 20 grand. And here is the components that you're going to get. And we started building out our client service model. We didn't want to treat all clients the same. Also, we had a lot of phone calls. We were in a very reactive seat. And so we quickly, I don't know if anyone has put this in place, but we quickly said, okay, I'm like, we're getting a lot of calls in. We're having some shifts, right? We had first founder moving out, new advisors moving in. It's an uncomfortable, we needed relationship equity to transition. So we implemented just because calls for all of our silver clients and above. They receive a call from an advisor once a quarter, and they usually have to call, each team calls about 5 clients a quarter. That was a quick way to start learning where engagement levels were. By the way, the first 2 calls, the clients were terrified that big change was happening in our firm and were calling for a bad reason, because they were only used to phone calls coming when it was like, we got news, your life is gonna shift, right? And so now they like love them. Like, they're sharing so much, and we have a very, very high client satisfaction, retention, and advocacy has really built through it. But it was a very quick way to start.
And can I just interrupt you a little bit there? Because sure. I know when Adam and Tiff and the other coaches talk, like, your brain can be like, oh, that, yeah, they went through some stuff. Like, they went through some stuff. So when Tiff's like, you know, now the clients are all, I mean, I remember conversations where you're like, we lost a couple clients, and, you know, someone's unhappy with this advisor, and, you know, like, they're, so I think it's just really important when Tiffany talked about that initial part of the process, where she's like, oh, we're going to go grow. Have any of you heard me do the, when we talk about scaling from millions to billions, I have this little saying, which is, it's always like, go grow, oh no. Right? It's like, go, grow, grow. And then one day you're like, oh no. And then we grow on top of it. And then it's more, oh no. And then, right, you're $1 billion and you call me because, right, it's way too complicated and you don't have the margins that you should have. Growth is messy. You're essentially doing the same thing in Limitless. You essentially came in and said, I'm going to go through my practice and systematically break, if not everything, a lot of things. And if you think about it like that, you can't systematically break everything at once. It would be too much. Right. And Tiffany and Jared couldn't do that either. And so she was very optimistic and excited about going into growth. But what she realized is you have to be ready for growth. Otherwise, growth is messy in a not good way. And you get more breakdowns and then you stop and fix them. And then it gets worse. So this is really one of those. Sometimes the fastest way to speed up is to slow down. Adam, who's on the line, called me, I don't know, was it 2 or 3 years ago, Adam? And he was like, I have more prospects than I can onboard at a time. What do you think I should do? And I was like, waiting list. And he was like, can I do that? But now he's like, oh, I turned the waiting list on again. He doesn't even think about it. So Tiffany, I just think that's a really, you know, when you think about that, there were moments where it was hard, where they didn't feel like they were getting it right. Like, the clients, you know, in that transition weren't getting the experience they wanted them to have, but notice they weren't just like, let's solve the problem this week. They were systematically trying to rise above it and say, who's the client and what level are they at? And is it really in relationship to that? What kind of planning and overall experience should we be giving them on this journey? What are the steps? What people do we need? If you decide, as Tiff and Jared did, right, hey, we need to provide those holistic integrated services, we've got to get a bunch of partnerships, those alliances really nailed down and working back and forth, or we've got to bring those services in-house, right? So as part of the customer journey, you're fundamentally changing the business model because the client is the North Star, which we'll talk more about at Summit. If you do the CX lesson, if you don't, you can watch it after, but there's a lot of research that really shows experience is where it's all at now. Genuinely, it's how people feel about the experience, which in your case is trust, relationship, and then all the other stuff. So I just know for you, like now you're on the other side, but you were in a messy middle there for a bit.
Oh yeah, for years. And I'll keep going, but Marianne, I thought I saw you raise your hand. Did you have a question?
I did. I just messaged you directly. And it was, I was actually planning on calling all of my A and Bs today. And I have been batting around the idea of what do I say as an opening line? Because you're right. They're going to see my number pop in and they're going to be like, yikes, what's this all about? And I don't want to freak them out. I want to engage them and make it a pleasant call and one that they feel is valuable. It's not a waste of their time. And is actually also a little bit on the social aspect, because I don't want them to always feel like I'm searching for that next dollar. I want them to feel like I care. I really want to know, hey, I remember you said that this is going to happen in the next 6 months. How's that coming along for you? I'm not sure what that looks like. Did you have a particular opening line? Like, you know, did you have a particular opening line? What is it? Would you mind sharing?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And I think something that's really important about these check-in calls is they're not one and done. So you want to ensure that you have a process that creates like that consistency, because the first couple, it's just like, you know, they're going to have that. And so what our advisors experienced was in those first few minutes, it was just like, hey, I'm not calling for any other reason than to just check in to see how you're doing today. And is there anything top of mind that I can do for you? This is something that we're implementing, and it's something that you can expect, you know, more often. So just some of those. And sometimes it was some of our advisors started on the birthdays, right? And or like some of the life events that they knew. And so it was, they would start with that. But now our clients more often than not answer the phone. There was a lot of voicemails to start too, because of just fear of picking up, right? So our engagement on answering the phone has gone up. Our number of calls has drastically dropped. And we have a lot more. I think we're ahead of the curve on what we're preparing for their surge or their meetings as well, because we're collecting things from them. Where it was like, oh, actually, I was going to call you, or I was going to email you. And so we're just in this different space with it. So I would say that, you know, it may just be, hey, I'm not calling for any other reason. I just wanted to check in. Is there anything top of mind? This is something that we're doing as a firm that we've seen a great, you know, we just wanted to make a shift where you're hearing from us more often. And it's been great. So we didn't really have like a one line script. Each advisor kind of took it their way. But after two, so it was two quarters, then we started getting more engagement and less fear of like picking up the phone. And in fact, right now we're not typically calling if any big changes are happening in the firm. Our clients are used to like looking at an email for firm updates. And so unless there was something that we would need to make that phone call, those phone calls are now just pure engagement touches.
Yeah. And the thing I love about that is, if you really decouple, and this is a stretch for some of us, I get it, but if you really decouple the value, right? There's economics involved, there's the experience, but it genuinely boils down to trust equity. And trust equity is relational, it's energy, genuinely. And so everything that you do to put yourself in a space that demonstrates to clients, they see you, I hear you, I understand you, I'm thinking about you and your money and the world and the markets and the government and Israel and Russia and everything else. And I can't make it okay. I can't, like, I, you know, smarter people than me have tried to predict the markets, right? But what I can do is make sure that you have a trusted partner every step of the way, right? And that's incredibly valuable to people. And so if you really decouple the value of trust equity from the technicals, the premise here is the technicals must be competent, above average, even better, right? Because it's available to you. But if you do that, this is why it works. And so Tiffany, you'll probably appreciate this. I think it's Peter Lazaroff. Who was I talking? one of the top advisors at one of the big firms did a piece, and I followed up. Literally, just every month, calls his top 20 clients, basically, right, his version of a just because call. Did it for a year. Clients stopped coming in for me. They just were like, we don't need meetings. Everything's fine. Like, we talk about whatever we need to talk about. His referral rates and share of wallet rates were like 4X and 7, like beyond 4X and some other big number above every other advisor in the firm. So what did they do, right? They all sat around, the partners, and they said, hey, maybe we should, right? So that's essentially what Tiffany did, because what you're doing, and again, it doesn't have to be monthly. It should not be every client. But when you think about your client profitability analysis and the 80-20 rule, whatever that, right, that top chunk, that segment that's 40 or 50% of your revenue, that'd be a good place to start. And if you call them once a quarter and just say, hey, it's Mark, I just want to check in. There's a lot going on in the world. I just wanted to let you know portfolio's good. We're definitely keeping an eye on things. But I just wanted to reach out and see if you had any questions. Are you and Bob, you know, is everything cool? We got your review coming up in September. We got tax planning on the, it's all good. That's just so awesome. Like, just reaching out. There's always something going on in the world, by the way. Right? You don't have to be like, hey, it's July again. What you'll find is people get really used to it the same way they do surges, the same way they do a video every Sunday. And what you heard Tiffany say, what you heard, see, like, the background noise, that clutter and distraction in between softens out. They're not calling because they know somebody's going to call me. I'll just hold on. And like, oh, I want to do that thing with the kids. And can I put them on the business? And instead of being like, bad email, I'll just be like, oh, she's going to call me in a couple months. I'll check in with her on that. Like, happens all the time. Right. So we're taking the value part of the relationship, the trust equity, that's the human value, and the advice, the practical value. And we're saying that's really what people connect with when they think about our relationship, referral, share of wallet, retention. And then the technicals, what Peter Wright noticed is they didn't come in for meetings. They're like, yeah, the portfolio is fine. Or you would have told me in one of our monthly calls. And when I had a question about whatever, you were like, hey, Bob, just want to let you know, we're making some changes to the portfolio this month because, you know, we're not feeling really good about, right, international equities right now. Bob be like, all right, that literally took the place of a 45-minute meeting. Like, just that quick little conversation. He's like, portfolio is good. Thank you. So just an example, again, you don't have to do this with every client, but you notice how Tiffany took the relational part, right? We talk about just because calls in, I don't know, one of the lessons, and then applied that across their advisor base. And now those relationships add, like, everything's going up, which is the second point I really want to call out. Both Tiffany's firm, right, and Peter's, what were they able to know? Tiffany said our engagement went up. The number of calls that they took went up, which means they were doing what? Where did that information come from? Did it fall from the sky like manna from heaven? The angels were like, hey, Tiff, here's a report where we gathered all that data for you. No, they tracked that data. So again, if you're starting out, don't feel like you need to rush. But if you're year two or three, or you're a leader, right, there is an element of, hey, I'm going to talk to my, if you're going to implement a strategy like this, it's nice at the same time to implement an accountability strategy with it. How do we know it worked is the question you should always ask, right? Mark says, I'm going to start implementing quarterly calls with my top 10 clients. Just, I don't want to do it with everyone because if they love it and I don't want to be stuck with it. I'm going to start with 5. And then he does that. And then, right, maybe you can't track a lot of data with 5 people, but you can be like, hey, were the meetings as long, right? If you were doing Julie Little's, right, little child's, right, real-time surveys, which I'm a huge fan of, you would know. And so little things like that, which is why we have these conversations, can make a really big difference along the way.
Yeah. And so I'm going to stick in the before for just a little bit, and then I'll share where we are today. And it may seem really magical, but there truly was 3 to 4 years in here where we kept going and refining, and we still refine. I think something that I've learned is that, like, we're never just going to get to this place of, like, we have it. Like, it's just going to be this constant tweak of, like, deepening value, creating efficiency, deepening value, creating efficiency. And it's just kind of one of those movements, and you'll get it. And then you'll add a team member and you'll feel the pinch, or you'll get it. And we had 5 onboards come on in January, and we've only, you know, like we account for 3 on average. And so how does that push us? And where do we see, the good news is we have a place for all things that don't work to land so that we can then come back to them. But we had, when I came on, I want to say we had 8 tiers for fees under the asset under management side. So it was like the math to even do a fee in the prospect process. I was like, I'm getting stuck. I don't even know how to quote this. Like, how do we constantly balance this? And like, believe it or not, in 2018, when I came in, it was still being done on like a spreadsheet by our accounting. I was like, they have software for this. We started with that, like, how do we simplify this so we can tell the story, make it easy for our clients to understand? So we looked at all of the fees, we looked at our fee chart. And if we took it down to 3 tiers and we just looked at like, what are competitors that we want to compete with? How are they doing their fees? And where are we off? Where does it raise some people up? Where may it actually even lower in some other areas? Which we didn't end up lowering, we just ended up moving up. But our first few comparisons, and we got to 3 without losing any clients in that one. There was a lot of technology shifts. If you guys have any questions on technology, literally shifted every piece of technology in our firm since 2018. We closed our broker dealer. And we were with Pershing on the broker dealer side. So we had to repaper no matter what. So we moved to Fidelity, and Fidelity has a retail side. So that was a really opportune moment for us to have conversations with clients that did not fit our model, to give them a great place to go and move their accounts and have that. So we were able to clean up our books there as well. And we have very few, we don't take any iron clients anymore. We do have a few that are legacy that work from a profitability perspective and are gauged, but we won't take anyone new. So we're not building that client tier. That will move off over time. But we did the fees. We had that conversation. Clients were great with it. It's way easier for the prospect process to quote. It's much easier for the clients to understand. And then our client service model. So we went through what are all of the areas of planning, advice, and pieces that we want to serve to our clients. How does that work with our 5 tiers? So we have platinum, gold, silver, bronze, and iron. Iron are like those legacy clients that say no to. They come up about once a year on, do you sell those? Like, at what point do you move and do those? Our bronze they may not necessarily meet our minimums. They don't meet our minimums, but they are family members or related to somebody, gold or platinum. So we remove our minimums so that we're in service of that family in total. But you did note that it wasn't any of our clients' family relationships, because we do need the profit numbers to work out on the other side. And then we put, okay, out of all of these services, what does platinum get? What does gold get? And then we went to our lead advisor, our second, our associate advisor, our accounts team, and our investment team. And we benchmarked to how the industry would maybe put components in there. And we said, how many hours a year are associated with serving these clients, so that we can start really thinking about how we're tracking our time, because service creep is where we become unprofitable quick. We need our teams to perform and deliver at a certain level to a certain number of families. And when they start having capacity crunch, we needed them to be bought into a model that we have that we can come back to, so that it's not just an unknown capacity crunch. It can quickly go into meeting time. Meeting time can definitely be there, and or just service or the ways in which we're servicing. And interesting enough, preparation has been a big component, and training that we've had to. That's been a time suck where certain advisors just really want to be prepared for anything possible that could ever come up in that meeting. And they will take 3 to 4 hours to prepare those meetings. So we created this time. The thing about all of this is we now know that every year we're spending about 44 hours with our platinum clients amongst the team, right? And there's going to be years where maybe that's a little higher or a little lower, but those are our most complex clients. They get offered quarterly meetings, and then it drops from there. We then have that broken out in teams so that we know how many could they possibly onboard, because we know that we have our ongoing service model and existing clients, but any new client coming in is actually double the hours in that first year because of the onboarding process. So we need to account for how do we keep moving that in. What this has allowed us to do is have a common buy-in, a common language, common measurements for success. And then how do we know when we're nearing capacity so that we get to, you know, hey, we're at about 80% capacity for this team, or the second chair is at about 90 and the lead advisor is at about 70. Like, what are we going to do there? That starts helping us think about how are we hiring or where do we need to pivot just a tad bit internally until we get those next components. So what we wanted to get was aligned, get disciplined, and then start becoming predictable. We can do those three things in our client service model. And with our team, we start having capacity, success, and much better conversations internally. Does that help?
Yeah, I just love all of that, because what you're noticing is Tiffany's really talking about the client is in the center, right, of the wheel, and every segment of the wheel is services, operations, like how are we marketing to the North Star? How are we serving the North Star? How are we making the North Star feel loved and engaged? And like we're there without doing 10 hours of planning work and preparing for, like, we're just going to call them and say, hey, cool stuff. Like, and I put a note in the chat and I hope it's okay. So I was like, their growth was like really messy across a lot of the facets, because you guys bought and inherited, in that sense, a really good firm, but a really typical OG founder firm, wake up, make it up and go. And so they literally had, you know, a lot of revenue and quite a few bodies, and it was like a fire, you know? And so for some of you with three people, it still feels that way. And so it's like really about how do we sort things out? The other thing I love about that, which we're going to get to right as we move from right the know your customers to engage to empower employees, is just from a productivity perspective, they have a handle, right? Because we're so big on this, on who's the client, are they profitable, what do they get, is it fair and equitable for the client and the firm? And what I calculated, so at the EA side, is the minimum retainer 20 or 25? Was it 20?
It's 20 on the EA side as a minimum. Yeah.
So I just calculated 25 in my head. So if you take 44 hours across the team at 25 hours, at 25,000, it's $568 an hour. If I do it by 20, it's $454 an hour. That's the effective hourly rate. That's all time divided by all fees. That's not even return on time. The effective hourly rate is $500 an hour across the team. And let's be honest, some people on the team make the right hourly equivalent of $75 an hour or $60 an hour, which tells you what about their productivity. So those 44 hours are hyper, I don't have to look at anything. I just know, because let's assume that 25% of those are advisor hours, their return on time is effectively $2,000 to $3,000 an hour. Check, not where I need to, but when we first did that exercise, we didn't do all this. We were like, got to go do a bunch of work, got to go do some more work, go do, and then it goes to the team, and then it goes to the what? Like, you're systematically going through everything. But if you do that high level, what's your return on time, right? Revenue divided by your revenue producing or sustaining hours, and then look at revenue across the team. And if you take your time and the team's time and it's $112 an hour, that's a really good indication you want to go do that client profitability analysis.
Yeah, it's such a great tool. Yeah, so that's where we're at in client service. That's how we got really clear. Now we get to deepen each component of that and continue to build. Remember when I was like, well, one's advisor's building it or possibly doing it this way and another one's doing it this way. We've created a financial planning team, which is our advisors. They meet once every 2 weeks and they create philosophies for consistent deployment of everything that we're doing. So that's been really helpful. That was living at Jared, delivering down. It's now living at the team, delivering up for firm approval. That's a really big step, by the way, because for a very long time, it was the other way around. And one of the biggest components that we've learned is how do we start really delegating to our team to give up? Like, I was tracking all the data for the firm for a year. And one of the first things, you know, in some coaching was like, how do you start receiving that data? Because I didn't have time to analyze it. I just had time to get it. And so when I can get in a seat of seeing the themes and patterns or being there, then that's where our team needs me and or Jared. So those have been really, really big components of the team, right? We have our investment team and what they're putting out on a quarterly basis to the team so that we can all educate and grow together, but have firm standards and consistently deliver. And that's still with our advisors doing about 80 to 85% of their time in front in client service. So, that's built in to just be a consistent meeting with quarterly goals. The things that maybe is where they're finding the most friction in serving clients, right? And it's like, how do we solve this so that next quarter it can be even better? This, once you get the client service model ready, it really then really helps you in the prospect process and who we do our best work with, like trying to define that. So we get to a place, we are no longer generalists. One thing we noticed was that a lot of our client base are I would call them legacy client base that grew with Steve, our founder. They also like they like aged with Steve. So we were running a very clear retirement practice and we were getting a ton of referrals around retirement. So Destiny Capital became the place for retirement planning in Colorado. Like that's where we went. We went geographic, we went retirement focused, aged it, put, you know, 55 plus retirement is your main focus. You live in Colorado. That was the big component. Do we take clients from out of state? Of course, we serve in like 48 states, but that's not who we're marketing to. And then Entrepreneur Aligned was born because we were very passionate as a firm about serving entrepreneurs and believed that we had a different way in which we could serve them and do it in a very profitable and exciting way. And we just didn't feel like there was much competition there. Jared and I both said we're gonna find out. There's either reason there's no competition there, or they're truly just somebody wasn't ready because the AUM model is a really clean model to work off of, and flat fee retainer is a different model to work off of, right? Because the AUM has like that credit card effect. There isn't a ton of fee friction, and you are living in a different place with the flat fee. You better be clear on the value that you're delivering and consistently delivering and how everybody's measuring that. So we created Entrepreneur Line because it was a passion of what we wanted to be for our firm in the future as well. So we have two clients. So we have the Destiny Capital side, we have two teams serving that, and that is our model. And it's $1 million in assets to come in, or about $10,000 in revenue as a minimum. And then on the Entrepreneur Line side, it's a $5,000 a quarter flat fee for business owners running personally, like closely held businesses. And honestly, a lot of times they have an investment guy. We are finding that our high value client probably has somebody who's managing their market investments, but they're not putting the business at the core of their planning. And so that tends to be an easier win for us. So, but I take this client service model and I'm like, great, how do we translate this to a sales side of things? I don't know if you guys ever get in this, but comprehensive financial planning has a lot of components to it. And you can watch people's eyes get like squirrely as you try to be like, no, we do all of that. And they're like, but like, how? And like, that's a lot. Or they will then focus in on one core component and you can't get them back to the bigger picture. So we created what we call on the Destiny Capital side, our remarkable retirement and the pillars of wealth associated with that. We have four pillars: get clear, grow wealth, minimize risk, and planning. And they get all four of those components. We walk them through it. Those pillars are also built into our client service model. And so you have the sub pillars that fall under each one of those components, but it started taking them on a journey where previously we maybe had some friction as to like, what is included there. The entrepreneurial side, we call it our personal wealth operating system. There's probably a lot of entrepreneurs in here that are familiar with EOS. And that's a very common language in the entrepreneurial world. And so it instantly started creating a common language with our ideal client who says, I get that. And I'm like, yeah, you are the visionary of your wealth. We're your integrating team. We're going to do your VT meetings, you know, your VTO meetings. This is what this looks like. This is the quarterly thing. And then all of a sudden it starts resonating. Like the pillars are clear enough. And even though there's a ton, they start to understand it. We've had a lot of yeses since we've been able to just wrap it the way we needed to. And the wrapping took a few years to figure out how to get there. Like I just had to keep pivoting what's going to get there. And one other big change I'll share in our prospect process is we no longer collect documents and do a financial plan upfront. I recognize that we were in a place of proving versus in a place of showing and answering questions. And since then, since June of 2023, we've had 100% conversion of qualified clients that have come in. And so that is not normal because Q2 last year, I was like, I'm throwing in my hat. Like I'm really not good at my job. I had a 40% close rate and I was like, this is awful. I don't know what I'm doing wrong. And what I started, I just pulled back and I started analyzing the prospect process. And what I learned is that when we were collecting half the documents to do the plan, to get them where they needed to get them to a yes, they were like hyper-focused on like one big thing. And they stopped seeing the big picture of the value that we could provide. So I created demos in eMoney of like, I have like three or four different demos for our Destiny Capital side, our EA side. I created a slide deck. I now, and I go through like, what's most top of mind for you? I have a slide that reiterates what they said. We go through those pillars of wealth. So EA, the personal wealth operating system, Destiny Capital, the remarkable retirement, what that means and in service to them. I demo eMoney. Like, have you guys ever seen a plan where it all comes together? Most people haven't. And it's like, let me show you that. I don't need to put in all of their stuff. They're like, you could do that with my stuff. Yes. And so I just want the one that relates most to them as a family and who I'm talking to. And since we know our ideal clients, we know what those demos need to be. And since then, my time has dropped by now the prospect process in total is about 6 to 7 hours to a yes, about three of those in person, about an hour and a half of that follow-up and about an hour and a half of that in prep. And we've gotten a lot more clear into the yes. And so that was something that I just thought was interesting is that it's not necessarily like this proving or building out a plan or taking that to get to a yes. They'll say yes if they just know that you hear them and you can show them a process that you can effectively execute consistently and their team, and then they're clear on price. And so that's been a big win in Nunit. But what I've learned is the limitless process where you go and get clear, create that leverage. We do have leverage right now. We can onboard 25 families across the teams before we need to make another hire. So I know that anybody I get to a yes, I know which team they can land on, who can serve them best, and that there'll be no onboarding friction because that did exist, right? Like I would get a client to a yes and the team would start panicking, right? Like, or then it was, well, I'm in the middle of surge. I'm like, okay, well, we need to create onboarding time in surge. How do we do that as a firm? Like, that's our next solve. And so we just kind of kept moving and refining that. But now we have it very consistent and clear. And now we can forecast those next components. We are big at saying yes to what's right. And we are gotten really good at saying no to things that aren't right. So questions?
There's like 5 years of awesome in the last 20 minutes. I'm just sitting here taking notes. So a couple of things, you guys have questions, drop them in the chat or the Q&A. We'll make sure we get to a few of them. Some things I want to call out that I hope you noticed. Tiffany said that their advisors spend 80 to 85% of their time servicing. Who else do you know that can tell you that their advisors, forget 85, who can tell you that their advisors, much less themselves, spend 80% of their time servicing? That is productivity. That is what is possible. The number for four hindrances to, there are four growth inhibitors, right? One, we don't optimize referrals, right? Whole conversation there. Lead gen, closing rates. We talk a lot about that here. Fourth one is advisor capacity. This is why this is one of the only freaking professions and services I can find where margins dilute as you get bigger and erode instead of getting, right? They erode instead of getting bigger. If I own a tennis shoe company and I double the amount of tennis shoes, my margins get better. Right? In this business where we have recurring revenue, like we just don't have to go find them. We just have to do a good job and not get them to fire us. Like, how are we not getting to those numbers sooner? And it's because we're compounding the problem, which is on average, we waste about 40% of our time, which means that your advisors on average are wasting 40% of their time, 30 to 40% before we think about surges and model meetings and service models and everything else that we're talking about. We're talking about the average advisor sitting in an office. And then we hire the next advisor and we're like, well, it's okay. We're at 60 or 70%. Yeah. And we hire the, if you even know that, by the way, and then you hire the next one or the next one. And now we've got is three or four people with a lot of complexity and dilution. So all the lack of process, like that gets worse, the dilution gets worse. And so the idea is when you know, right, it's good to know. You don't have to go to the level that Tiffany's going, but how many hours are you spending in your process? To have clients who are paying $20,000, $25,000, $30,000 and more, right? Because they go up. To be 6 or 7 hours for a high net worth client, that's less than most of you are spending on your average retiree with just the whole, right? The inefficiencies built in. And they're doing that with really complicated clients because they've got a system. So advisor productivity is a really big lever to pay attention to, particularly as you grow your firm. So don't skip over that 20 or 30%, because if you're willing to do it the first time, you'll do it the second and the third time. You'll tell yourself it's this person and it might be, and it's okay if that's their max, but you really have to, that's where that team revenue modeler tool that Tiff was talking about. If you have multiple advisors, it's not usually three advisors at 700,000, it's one advisor at 1.2 and another at 100 and another at 212. Two, the thing that Tiffany talked about was, and you, we talked about this in leaders, but it really applies to you guys too. There are five differentiators. I think we talked about this in niche. Niche is one of them. Pricing model, which is what Tiffany and Jared have done on the EA side, because it's a really big lever for people with money. They go, when you get a lot of questions, like, why do you charge us that way? What about this flat fee thing? That's where you know your space is there too. And this is my favorite part of this conversation, which Tiffany probably doesn't know, but the personal wealth operating system is what we call a uniquely branded CX, especially if you have a general clientele, right? Pricing models, niches, unique branded CX, and technical specialty are, right? The more you stack those, the more, right? They're still differentiators. Niche is the bestest. But if you have a general niche like retirees or women, you want to try and stack those other differentiators. And what we did with Tiff and Jared and Destiny, I remember that. Where were we? Was it the co-working space? And we were talking about EOS and I was like, we need something. And it just worked. And so I'm really glad to hear that that has translated, because everybody gets it. Like, oh, there's a plan and there's a structure. It's kind of like when you send things by FedEx, you're borrowing, right? When it absolutely has to be there overnight, like FedEx has done the marketing. That's the power of branded CX. What we did with that was take all of the amazing work that Tiff and Jared did, and it's cool wheel. If you go to their website, it's like really cool what Tiffany was able to carry on from those right early conversations and build out with a lot of creativity and discipline. Is now they know what they're buying. You're buying a personal wealth operating system. It includes these areas. It includes these services. It includes these people to help you execute. Like, you see all of it in seconds or minutes versus I got to put all of that in a box in my brain and figure out if I'm going to give these people 20 or 25 grand or not, or 5 grand. And so the lesson here is confused people don't buy. They don't click. They don't call. So you need to package the value. It's one of the lessons we'll go on right over the limitless cycle, is you'll get that unique branded lesson. But I really want to call that out because it's a really big deal. It takes the intangible and it makes it tangible for your brain. So it's great to hear that your conversion rates are really good. That's fantastic.
I know one's going to drop here soon and somebody's going to say no, our goal is 75%. And I'm not going to, but we're in it right now. And all that, you know, there was just levels of proof of concept that was needed.
How many of you have, you know, Adam, I know you went through this in the beginning. I know some of you will call or email and be like, but I built the system and I call it laying the tracks. You're like, but the clients aren't here. You know, the steady, I'm like, no, that's really cute. You got to lay the tracks and you got to master the tracks. Like Tiffany talked about how she kept going back and I looked at this step in the process and I looked at this step in the process and I looked at this data. And for most of you, that's a lot easier than it is for Tiffany because you're doing it for you. Tiffany's doing it for her and 5-6 other advisors, right? There's a lot of data they've got to pull in. So what you'll notice is, and I hope what you take away, aside from just the awesomeness of all of, right, the specifics of how they've applied the limitless concept, is you hear those concepts constantly, like, oh, it's a unique branded CX. They've got a unique pricing model. They're clear on their niche. They're using service models. They're using surges. They're using just because calls. Like all of those are the same concepts that you're being given. This is just the other side of how you apply. And so what I love about it when we have people come and share is, one, you're like, wow, the other side is so much greener. It's amazing. What Tiffany will tell you is the other side may be greener, but it still has to be mowed. Which is why I kept jumping in and going, and I know everyone's like, I'm through it. Don't make us go back. And I'm like, when you're the person who's in the messy middle, it's incredibly valuable to hear that Tiffany had a moment where she talked to Stephanie and was like, my closing rate sucks. This is depressing. What, you know, what's going on? And I'm like, you laid the tracks, Tiff. Do you remember? Like you laid the tracks. It's going to just go through. And Tiffany, like, she's like, Michael, you give her like 7 seconds of conversation. And she just, like, from there, she took that whole website with Will Now and just built out like every concept that we had talked about and said, hey, like, she just really held them to that standard. And both sites do, like, we always use them as examples because one, Will Now does a great job on the website and they do a lot of the heavy lifting and then incorporate branding and SEO and data analytics, which I'm huge on, which makes it easier to do that work. But Tiffany was really there to be the voice of the client. The North Star. We got to change our teams. We're not able to respond to our clients the way we need to. Well, we can't get into that with this client. It takes 9 hours. We need a different tech to solve that problem. I mean, it literally putting the client at the center sounds like this squishy exercise, but when you do it right, it will force you to literally systematically go through each part of the firm and say, God, we tell clients that our number one goal is to simplify their life. And we start with a 17-page questionnaire. How does that make them feel? What does that make them think? If they get something from me at the beginning of the process that makes them go, oh, shit, ah, is that the feeling I want them to have? So when we go into that lesson, in the, you can watch it if you're attending others, there's a roadmap for you to go through and audit your client experience from the sales and marketing cycle, right, to the onboarding, prospecting, to the onboarding, to the servicing, so that you can really start to think through. And you can make tiny little changes, like just because calls mark with your top 5 clients, just to test it out. You don't have to go, this is what I love. I hope you guys love it. And I'm constantly trying to remind you, you don't have to go build everything Tiffany talked about, but you're like, that just because call thing, I think I could try that with my top 5 clients. Just want to see how it goes. You don't, right? Rip off and deploy, refine until no new edits are required. If Mark likes that idea, then he'll be like, great, I'll try that with 10 clients or 20 clients or, right? So find something, not necessarily everything in this conversation, that really appeals to where and resonates with where you are right now. That's a low-lying win. And you're like, hey, that was cool. Or maybe it's conceptual. Maybe you're like, wow, I really do need to think about how my team is supporting the client. Like, what is the experience they're having? Why is it taking so much time? Why, right? So whether it's you're looking at your service model or your prospect process or your niche and differentiator, what you'll notice is the client is always the North Star. And that's what I think is the grounding rod for the changes that Tiffany and Jared have made. And they have been massive and considerable and heavy and messy and a lot of work. And on the other side is a really awesome practice, not perfect, still always doing work, but now they feel like Tiffany, you should probably say, like, a lot more agency over the experience and the outcomes they create for themselves and their clients.
Yeah, definitely. And you said something really important, and this is not me. I'm a perfectionist in all the ways, and I really, really have to, I'll give myself space. Luckily, my business partner, Jared, is not, and he believes in MVP. And so what Steph is saying, like, I got real comfortable putting something out at like what I would consider 75-80% and not done. And that has helped us a lot, because it turns out it was better out than never going out. And we were getting momentum. And then you learn so much more in the refinement anyways, the way that we're able to continue and build really helps. So that MVP, like, if you look at all these things that are on your to-do list where you're partially done, like, start picking some and start rolling it out. But the Just Because calls, like, it didn't start in the way that it was. It was just like, you know, like, it was like, okay, each team, like, how many calls do you think you could handle, like, based on where we're at, and how many, like, how do we make that selection to start, and how do we go through that? And now it's just like such a consistent practice, and the ways in which they're reporting them that we can now see them, right? Like, it wasn't like there was no way that we were creating reports and all of those things. Now we can pull that, ensure that we can see if, like, we feel like a client engagement's dipping. We're in a place where we can, like, call retention risk out in a much better way. Not that that happens very often in our industry. And certainly not when you're doing Just Because calls, by the way. It helps a lot because you're nipping things before they become big, big stories. But that MVP is really, really important. I've gotten to the point of, I'm like, we're pretty much there. Let's get it out. Or, while I would love to retweak that blog one more time, how is that really truly going to affect the client? Like, it's going to be better to get that out today versus tomorrow or never, because it sits, because I'm just trying to, like, hit that right call to action. And I'm like, well, we're sending one out in another week. Like, we can A/B test that, you know? So just don't get stuck.
Yeah, I had to figure out for me personally, and you know, we all just, you know, we say things a lot of different ways here, because what we know is, right, it's something's going to hit you in the way that it hits you, and I never know what it's going to be. But for me, I remember thinking when I heard the whole, you know, launch at 70%, and, you know, I was like, that's so awful. Like, I would never do that. Like, I'm never going to put my clients. This entire program is me practicing in public. Every year we sit down and go, what do you think? Let's try this. Oh, let's try this. No guarantee. Like, you know, okay, you know, the hypothetically should work because we've got a lot of experience, but literally it's an educated guess. And what I figured out is that if I thought I was putting out 100%, it was a lie. It's always 70%. I don't care how good you are, how perfect you are, how many hours you lament. I mean, at United, I had a lot of money and a huge team. We did amazing stuff and I launched incredible stuff. And I got massive amounts of feedback, and then I got more feedback. So we, like, I always build in, right, like, the launch and then the iteration cycle. And so what's most important is that you put it out at 70%, not at 40, because, right, then you're kind of opening yourself up. And then it's that feedback process. So what I love is that Tiffany's just iterating, putting it out, making a change to the website, putting it out, looking at the data, trying it out. Practice in public. That's what we want to do. We don't want to get to perfect. If you get to perfect, please call me, because you have figured something out that I haven't, and you should be writing the book on it. Like, there's just no such thing. All right, we've got a couple of questions. I know we've covered a little bit of these, but I want to just go in. One, I know you were having some computer issues over the weekend, you and I were chatting. Do you have a visual of the service model that you could share with us, that we could share with the group?
Yeah, let me, we have it. We have it on, like, a really dinky Excel spreadsheet. So let me just see if I can, get that over and maybe put a little, like, design.
Well, just send it to us and we'll make it pretty. Right? We should not do that with your time. If you'll share it, we'll make it pretty.
You got it.
We have great designers who are happy to do that. All right. So Christian, you had some questions about PWOS and, like, how deep you go with that. Do you want to just talk a little bit about that, Tiff? Like, do you share the concept? Do you go into every aspect? And if you have something you could show and tell, feel free.
Let me show you. I was just going
to. Guys, I have to say, I love this PW, like, the personal, like, it just so works for entrepreneurs. Like, it makes me giddy. That's how you know you got a good brand idea, when you're like, yes.
Yeah, it's been fun to find it. So let me talk about it while I find it in my, I was gonna show you. So the first question I ask is, are you familiar with EOS? And if that's a yes, then I know it's gonna translate. And if it's a no, they're most likely in their business are running some sort of system that's similar. So I ask them about the system that they're running to set their goals and measure in business and what they're doing, right? Because it's a very common language, but if they use EOS, they instantly know the value of how that's changed their business. It's really quite amazing because it creates a structure to scale your business and focus in on priorities. And typically you can have a coach, and it talks about the importance of an integrator, which we are financial integrating teams, right? So it really balances a lot. Let me see. Dang it. There's the slide. Let me share screen.
Brad, I just let go of control. You should be able to do it.
Okay. Probably see this. So this is my intro. I can double hit questions. Bridget, I think you had a question too on how I qualify them. For EA, it really doesn't matter. It's a flat fee. So they can assume if they're opting in or out financially. But what I tell them is we typically see friction below $500,000 in annual household income because it's $5,000 a quarter. We see no friction at $1 million. We see a little friction in between. They're really like, where are my trade-offs in business and life? That tends to be the question there. On the Destiny Capital side, not collecting documents, I do ask questions up front. Most people have a pretty high level, but again, we have a $2,500 a quarter minimum. And so people sometimes even at $500,000 or $600,000 in assets still choose to work with us because they love the amount of planning and work that we do, and they just have to meet those minimums. So that's a part of just really knowing your fees. And we're willing to bill and help make that happen for them if they value that. So I start with two for the intro, what's top of mind and what's most important for you to learn today to feel the time you invested was well spent. Like, and then in the next meeting, it's what do you need to learn today to feel like you can make a decision by the end of the meeting, and or like that you feel equipped to make a decision. And they're very upfront. So this is the first meeting. This is the PWOS. So these are the key principles of effective financial planning and how we're going about it. It just introduces them to the pillars. And then this is the slide that I spend the most time on in the intro meeting with them to help them understand. See, it's not very pretty. I'll eventually get this into some sort of infographic of some sort. But the get clear, like, what are we going through that and why? Like, what's important there? We talk a lot about the values. Entrepreneurs are usually pretty values focused and centric, and family and relationship. With money and spouse, the grow wealth. I was like, this is the fun piece that every entrepreneur thinks is super sexy. Here's how we go about this, and kind of have that conversation of like, but that minimize risk. I'm like, this is where we're looking for no singular failure points in your financial plan, or where are high failure points that you have. Let's talk tax compliance versus tax planning every single time with an entrepreneur, by the way. And they're all like, you're right, I'm getting compliance and I'm not getting planning. I'm like, yes, this is where our team comes in. Estate is really big right now in gifting, especially with closely held business owners because of the laws that are sunsetting. So that's a hot topic and a fun thing to bring up. And then the one that differs than most traditional financial planning, and this one usually is like, people are like, I've never seen this before, is that optimized equity component. So that's where we're talking business continuity. Almost every closely held business owner has they don't have business continuity in place very well. And so when we've already talked about like where spouse could possibly come in, it's like, you know, so something happens to you and that's a like big, like, ooh, that all of a sudden is taking a priority. We talk about like, equity and distributions, owner compensation, exit planning. And then of course, like, and I'm like, and then all the traditional components are still a part of that: retirement planning, charitable giving, major purchases. And I said, and when all of these pillars are run really, really well, we're spending a lot of our time on that maximized life, because all of these components are consistently playing in how you're spending your time or investing your time. Where's your energy? You know, are you getting, are you spending time with the most important people into you, with you? How's your health, right? So when these components are in place, you will notice that our conversations will shift a lot. And then I just really talk about the team structure. So with Entrepreneur Aligned, right? It's them. They're integrating team that get across the 4 to 5 pillars. The maximized life is one that we've gone back and forth on. And then we help collaborate and coordinate with all their specialized advisors. So it puts us in a seat that is missing, and it's really important to them. And so that's how we talk about the PWOS. We talk about what does it entail, and it's a journey, not an event, right? Like, this isn't going to be a one-time thing. The importance of these quarterly meetings, how they get to sit in the visionary seat. They're huge DIYers, and or they have an investment person, but closely held business owners and entrepreneurs in general, they don't tend to value their market investments in a way where you want that as a measuring stick, or you want them measuring you. Most of ours are using it either for treasury management or liquidity. Their business tends to be the big component. Honestly, their second asset class tends to be real estate. It tends to be their next go-to. And then we get into some private equity and other things like that. But what they're using for the market. So I talk about that. I'm like, a lot of our, and they're like, yes, like I am experiencing that. So this has just really helped us simplify. Like, you get all of this. And we're the team that helps you take it from you. Like, you're currently balancing all of this. How's that feeling? Where's that at? You know, and then we take that to, that's the process. And we tell them how we're going to onboard, what we, and then we go from there.
Yeah, and notice the way that this is packaged is that all the technical stuff is a how behind a what or a why. The key outcomes that they deliver, we're going to help you get clear. We're going to help you grow your wealth. We're going to help you minimize risk. Like, those are outcomes that all they know, right? Think about the branding. Like, all entrepreneurs want those things, which is why the alignment with Entrepreneur Operating System works so well. That was the whole idea, is we're just going to borrow all of that training, learning, and alignment and be like, you want to be clear? Yes. You want to grow? Like, so people go, yes, I want those things. And then the how is just like, oh, they're smart people. They've got all the pieces and all the stuff I don't want to worry about. When we lead with the stuff, people in their brains have to figure out, right, the relationship, the value, and the messaging. And so that's what I love about, right, where the brand ultimately ended up is with the core concepts, right? Those messaging points from Limitless. And then Will Now did a lot of work, did client interviews, right? Tiffany was hugely involved in the process of making sure that, I'm sure, right, every comma, every word was aligned the way that it needed to be. But you can really, if you go to the website, you can see how strong the concept plays, to Christian's question, before you even have the details, because it's so clear, it's so cohesive. And as a result, it's really, really compelling. They've really curated thoughts and feelings of what it's going to be like and what they're going to do, so that when people are sitting on the website, they go, oh, yes, I think I'd like some of that. Because as you'll hear me say 1,000 times this year, confused people don't buy. Confused people don't click. Confused people think, I got to think about this. I'll get back to it later. And so ultimately the goal is to create as simple a messaging and process as you can. And that's the value of being uniquely branded CX, is all that squishy stuff and a 40% closing rate went to tangible and 100% closing rate. The team is hyper leveraged, right? 80% or less of advisor time is on servicing clients, right? Like, the clients are clear. So if we go back to those 6 steps, which I'll do here, let's see how I do that again.
And can I add something, Steph?
Yeah, please do.
As you guys saw that, it was the way that that has now been framed, both for our Destiny Capital side, right? Like, remove optimized equity and we put remarkable retirement versus maximized life, right? So we can be very effective in both brands. But you see the sub pillars, like it adds, like imagine a client service model is defined in that. So as a team, we can look and be like, great, how are we tackling goals or values or vision if those conversations come up for which client service tier? Like, how are we as a firm looking at investments? What do we do from a real estate perspective and what don't we do? We do that a lot in our client service model. What do we do? What don't we do? So we have clear defined models. But then also those five pillars, like think of our content. I'm like, great, I need a max life piece. Like I need a grow wealth piece. Like what's hot happening in grow wealth? But you can see that that translates into like, how are we presenting to our clients? How are we looking at our quarters? Like we can have different quarters with different focuses on those pillars. And so when you get clear and you have that, it starts building the infrastructure for everything to be common. It really helped us get clear on like how we're building our content, what is included in our newsletter, like just each component. And before we had that clarity, I'm like, when you look at all those sub pillars, it can get really confusing on where you're differentiating yourself and spending your time. So you can get in the habit of like throwing spaghetti at a wall.
Yeah. So the reason that Tiffany can do that is because they did the right client is the North Star, pain points and possibility, like went through the same exact exercises that we right have you guys go through to get to the point where they were really abundantly clear on who their ideal client avatar is down to the gnat's hiney, right? Like they know, and then everything they do, Tiffany is the voice of the client. Who's the voice of the client in your firm? Right. So I used to, when we had physical offices, just hand a piece of paper to the principal and their staff and take them out of the office when I would do an audit. And I'd be like, okay, go through your office and tell me what you see. And they'd be like, oh, there's like a stain on the carpet over there. And this, and you know, and I was like, okay, now that's just the office. Think about every phone call, every meeting, every form that you send, everything that Fidelity drops in their inbox. Like you own all of that and you're sitting in the physical space and you miss this stuff. So it's when you're there, if you're not there, that's okay. Find the pieces, the gems that you can pull out, like that you can implement now, and then keep this broader context so that as you'd heard Tiffany, brick by brick, in Costa Rica, we have the saying, poco y poco, bit by bit. I walk around, like I'll be working on something big and I have to remind myself, I'm like, poco y poco, like bit by bit. I'm going to lay the brick path. One brick at a time. We say that a lot in the team, like one brick at a time, one brick at a time, right? You build the walls up one brick at a time, but you can tear them down pretty rapidly because it's almost always the mindset. Like walls can shatter quickly. So Tiffany, thank you so much. That was such a cool run through. When you think about those 6 points, right? Engaging clients, engaging your team, you know, cold, like all of those 6 pieces really do show up when you put the center, the client at the center of the experience, which means that in order to do that, you have to be in your clear, conscious space, which is right. Just a nice segue back to where we started, which is it's all about your momentum. Your momentum is all about your energy. Are you empowered or disempowered? I genuinely feel like I'm more empowered listening to Tiffany talk about the changes and the transformations that she's really led with Jared across the firm. And it, I have to tell you, she gets all the credit. Jared gets all the credit, but I do sometimes sit here and just feel like a little proud mama. Like I just dropped a few C's and they did these amazing things. And it just makes my heart go like, this is why I do what I do. I am, you guys, I was there with Tiff in the moments where it was like, I'm closing nothing. Why does Jared have me here? And I'm like, oh girl, no. And now look at the incredible magic that she is creating in this practice. So Tiffany, I love you with my whole heart. I love the success that you and Jared are creating. And I especially love just the generosity and the abundant energy with which you continue to share it with our community. Thank you so, so much. You guys, we'll get samples from Tiffany. And make sure we put those in the next inbox or under the service model lessons. But you guys, big, big hug, big love for Tiffany over here. Whoop, whoop. Oh, makes my heart so full. It really does. All right, you guys, it's your week. Go own it. Go crush it. Go make some magic happen. We love you. Have a great one.